Welcome to the Day Zero update for May 3rd, 2015. I'm Philippe Ladonfo.
I'm Patrick Meslin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
Lee is missing this week. He was kind of a game time decision of sorts. He's at the doctor's office right now with a bit of a leg thing, but he'll be back here next week.
Yeah. Remember, folks, we are old.
Yep.
Yes, we are. So with that in mind, let's just jump right into what we're playing. Pat.
Yeah. Played a little bit of Mortal Kombat 10, not as much as I would have liked, but I'm hoping to alleviate that in the next few days. I'm still absolutely glued to Final Fantasy Record Keeper. They just dropped some new content, and the second really major update is on the way,
right?
Which will have the worlds of 3, 8, and 13. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And then I've gotten glued once again to Shovel Knight.
Okay.
Just it's not the, like I bought the PlayStation version of it, but I just went back to continuing my game on the PC.
Yeah.
So kind of weird how that worked out, but I think I'm getting close to the end there.
Yeah.
I'm still thoroughly enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to playing it again on the PS4.
Yeah.
This is just one of those games. It's like a love letter to the entire era, and it almost feels like one to the Turbo Duo in particular, because just stylistically, that's where it seems to be hitting more than anything.
Okay.
It's basically one giant love letter to Capcom.
It kind of is.
In the NES era, because I mean, it's Mega Man, it's Ghouls and Ghosts, and it's DuckTales all wrapped up in one game.
Yeah.
And the fucking Propeller Knight stage.
Oh yeah, he will drive you fucking crazy.
I hit myself with that yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, there were times I almost sat down the controller and said, "Nope, not today."
Yeah.
Yeah, his boss fight is incredibly annoying.
His boss fight is annoying, but his stage is the real ball breaker. That's just...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The part with the air currents?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh. There was a lot of trial and error going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least you get Infinite Continues, so...
That's
good. And I've been making a point to spend as much of my gold as possible between levels, just for that reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they sort of put in a sort of Dark Souls mechanic where if you die, just all of your loot is hovering in these little bags where you died. If you get back there, you can get it back.
Not necessarily where you can get to them.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
But then there's also a bit of a gambling mechanic to it, because you can actually destroy the checkpoints and get gold for it.
Yeah.
So if you're really confident in your ability to get through a stage, you just smash all the checkpoints, and it's a really interesting mechanic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how about you, Phil?
Well, Defense Grid 2, been playing a bit of that this week. Not as much as I have in past weeks, and that's because I've been playing Mortal Kombat 10 a lot more, which I'm still enjoying thoroughly. And another little game I started playing was Royals, which is really interesting.
Yeah, you just kind of randomly started talking about it. I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, it's by the designer of Threes, and it's kind of a Oregon Trail style peasant simulator where you're trying to become royalty, and it's harder than you would imagine it would be.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's
so you can't just take the prints and use it as an instruction manual.
Nope. You don't got any of that. You basically start off at the age of 12 on your farm with nothing, and you got to build up an empire 1 year at a time. And every year that goes by, one of your hit points goes down. So you know your life expectancy is pretty short.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a really interesting game. It's one of those you can pay what you want for it. It's available on their website. It's definitely worth checking out.
How much is it?
Pay what you want.
Oh.
Yep. Yeah, you can kick them a couple bucks, or you can download it for free and kick them a couple of bucks later, whatever.
That's a good arrangement.
Yeah. Yeah, probably will, because there's a few mechanics that kind of bug me a little bit. How about you, Brandon?
GTA 5 on my Xbox One, and yeah, it's still great. Yeah, doing the, I said it before, but playing this game in first person is an amazing experience.
Yeah, that's why I'm definitely holding out for the 8th generation versions of the game once I finally have some money.
Yeah.
Because, when you're in first person, you're finally able to see all of the little details that they have in this game, and some of them are pretty funny.
Yeah.
Other than that, I finally started on a Broken Age, since, now that the whole game is available now, with parts 1 and 2.
So it's not quite as Broken Age now. So it's actually semi-finished.
And it's actually, yeah, it's really good. Yeah. It's a really good old school adventure game. It's well written, well acted. It looks beautiful. I love the art direction they used. Really not a whole lot more I can say about it until I've gotten a good ways through it. Okay. Which probably I'll have gotten at least through part 1 by next week. So,
cool. So when you say old school adventure game, what do you mean exactly? 'Cause that can mean
point and click.
Oh, okay.
Point and click. It's not quite as infuriating as like some of the old adventure games, one where you had to like use the, you had to click on everything in order to finally get your, trying to achieve what you want. Most of it, most of it is just using logic and, so it's not quite as difficult as some of the older ones are.
Yeah.
But it's got a really good story, and the basic story is that if you've ever seen Screens, it's basically these two parallel stories. There's this one guy who's on a spaceship, apparently, and I haven't done too much of his. Most of what I've been doing is the other one, Estelle. I don't think that's her name. She lives in this place where there's this big, monster that everyone in this place has to appease with this ceremony they call the Maiden's Feast, where all the young girls in the town, all the pretty young girls in the town dress up, and then basically they appease the monster. I think it's called Mog Chagroth or Chag Magroth, something like that. And basically they feed the maidens to Mog Chagroth.
That's where I figured that was going.
Yeah, and it's actually really creepy because it's like one of those things. It's like, oh, it's going to be so, you're just like, oh, they got to feed the little girls and it's going to be so sad. No, they are completely happy about it. They actually are trying to attract Mog Chagroth to come and eat them.
That's kind of fucked up.
It's really creepy. But anyway, the girl that you play is like, you know what? Fuck this. So she actually manages to escape. And so she's basically going around the world trying to find a way to kill Mog Chagroth. And that's about it for right now. I'll probably have more to say next week. But I'm hoping I'm hoping at some point today to go over to GameStop and get a copy of Just Cause 2, because I have a friend who's been playing Just Cause and he's freaking raving about it to me, and I'm like, I gotta give this a try.
Yeah, Just Cause 2 is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you like the open world stuff, this one.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So it has lots of explosions and completely improbable physics, but it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's me. So, Teresa?
Well,
or Theresa?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we can hear you.
It's been a handheld kind of week. I've been doing poker crap everywhere. They got me with Pokemon Shuffle, so there's that. And I've been continuing on with Sapphire. And
that's still treating you well?
Yeah, actually, I'm kind of playing it right now. So, nice. But I bought FTL. It was on sale this week, and I had been watching for it, and I installed that. So hopefully I'll be playing that after the call.
All right. What's that? Yeah, kind of a good gaming going on for the four of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Pat, we just debuted another feature on the site.
Yeah, the Smash Pad Shrapnel. It's kind of spill over from the Day Zero update, as a sort of mitigation factor to try and avoid these three-hour shows, although that's probably going to be an inevitability come E3. We'll try to make it the exception more than the rule, and so we've started doing some just off-the-cuff reporting and commentary that you can find on our YouTube channel. It's just a little bit kind of news and notes that we just didn't really have much room for on the show.
Yeah, we're still working on the formula for that. We might do one story per video or a couple stories, or we might,
we might even do a mini show.
So we'll figure that out as time goes by.
But so far, you just got a couple of bite-sized, a couple minutes of one of us talking about, a couple news items. There was the Hell Dirt Rally.
Yeah, there was Nis.
Yeah,
saying digital
focusing on visual novels.
Visual novels were doing and well.
Killer Instinct, and I know I forgot to mention the sort of stretch goal on the. On the Shadow Jago community pack, to where if it raises $100,000, then the boss version of Shadow Jago will be sort of tuned down and made available as a playable character for somewhere down the road.
Okay.
But, definitely worth picking up.
Yeah.
So check that out if you're interested, and just our catalog of content continues to grow.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get right into our discussion stories, and probably a little bit of a quick one here with PC Gamer and AMD doing an event at E3.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. The PC being largely decentralized, you got Valve running Steam, but other than that, there's not really a company primarily backing the PC as a platform, the way Microsoft has the Xbox One, the way Sony has the PlayStation line. And so it's kind of interesting here. We're seeing PC Gamer and AMD get together and do something of a press conference by committee so that the PC gamers aren't really left out of the whole E3 press conference experience, which I think is pretty
good. Yeah. And they got some pretty big names there. I mean, they got PC Gamer and AMD were the ones putting it on. So I'm hoping that we're actually going to see AMD announce their new series of graphics cards there. But I've also got Blizzard and Tripwire and Square Enix and some smaller folks like Devolver and Humble Bundle are going to be there as well. So it looks like they're aiming for a more well-rounded show as opposed to just showing off big AAA stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty awesome. We like to hear about things like this. It doesn't have to all be really, really big news, but everything all together, it's cumulative.
Yeah.
I think that's indicative of the way PC gaming is going all together.
Yeah.
I mean, you're always going to have your hardware-heavy games that come out and just showcase the machines we're buying, but I think now more than ever we're seeing an influx of games that you can pretty much play whatever kind of system you have. And PC gaming, I mean, it's always been there to some degree, but it's never been this prominent. And I think PC gaming long-term is going to be a lot stronger because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of nice to see something like this show up to show the diversity of PC gaming, really.
I'm honestly kind of surprised that Valve isn't doing an event. I mean, they're more than big enough to be able to put something like this on themselves.
It's true. And you know, when they inevitably do make certain announcements, they're going to want to do it at a press conference. <Half-Life 3.
clears throat> Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Half-Life 3.
So.
Which, you know, when Half-Life 3 finally comes out, there is no way it's ever going to be able to measure up to the hype and anticipation that's been coming from it for over a decade now.
Yeah, there's it's kind of gone into Duke Nukem Forever territory, even though it's probably in some kind of development at this point. But it's just one of those unwritten rules where the longer you let an anticipated sequel stew, the less likely it becomes possible to make a game that can live up to the hype that will be backing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that might be a really pessimistic way of looking at it, but it just, it seems like they've let this one go for a little too long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this next story is definitely for Brandon, I think.
Okay, Playtonic. The guys who are a bunch of former Rare folks working on their spiritual successor to the Banjo-Kazooie series, they ended up revealing the game. It's called Yooka-Laylee. And then they put it on their Kickstarter, and within about 6 hours, it was completely funded.
I don't even think it took 6 hours to do that.
Yep.
Wow. I'd heard it was minutes.
And then,
yep.
By the following morning, they had completely smashed through all of their stretch goals. And last I checked, they are very close to hitting just about $2 million.
Yeah.
For their funding.
Which is good, because usually when you calculate stretch goals, you kind of have to leave some wiggle room in there, because there will be unforeseen things that will cost more money. So
yeah,
the more of it, the better.
Yeah, so because they've been able to go through all their stretch goals, that means that they will be having a day one multi-platform release for Xbox 360, PS3, Xbox One, PS4, and Wii U. And anybody who's looked at the pitch video, it looks great. Basically, this time instead of a you know, Banjo being a bear and Kazooie a bird, it's the main character is a chameleon, and the thing on the back is, I'm guessing, is a fruit bat.
Yeah.
And it's got it. If you watch it, it's got a lot of the same mechanics as Banjo-Kazooie does. But considering that the big character is a chameleon, that probably means there will be some sort of camouflage mechanics. I tell you, just watching the video and hearing that music, I could already tell that this was going to be a game for me. It's that old school Rare music vibe.
Yeah.
It's,
okay, I'm on their Kickstarter page right now. This is kind of interesting. 44 days to go.
Yep.
$1,932,327 raised. And here's what I want explained to me. Pledged of $270,041 goal. That is an awfully specific number, and I'm not sure how they arrived at that. But it just seems kind of odd.
Yeah.
Well, they don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually going up as I'm watching it on the page. This is not something I'm used to seeing.
Yeah. Last night when I was watching the pitch video, this was literally the first time where I was watching a pitch video on Kickstarter, and I could watch the amount of the money just going up. In. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had already cleared $1 million by that point, so.
Yeah, it just goes to show that this is a style of game that people want to play, and very few publishers are willing to do it.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely still an audience for it out there.
Yeah.
And, well, now it looks like not only are we going to get it, but it's going to be a well-funded one.
Yeah.
And we're going to get a, you know, get a day one pretty much console-wide release and probably a bunch of other stuff before, you know, the end of the month. So.
Yeah. Like, basically 10 people have funded this game since we started talking about it.
Yep.
Yeah, they've got about over 36,000 backers. Yeah. So
they're going to be richer than Rare by the time this is done.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely expect a kind of a surge on the last
went
day.
Up again.
Cuz that's usually how those things go.
Wow.
Speaking of just weirdness, I just wanted to point this out before we go on to our next story. Any of you guys checked out Mountains of Mouthness?
No.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah. Oh. That's a
you
thing.
Have?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Basically, these dudes made this website. It's mountainsofmouthness.com. And basically, it's these two giant mountains that will read out anything on Twitter that has the hashtag mountains, hashtag mouthness, or hashtag bad on it. And it's weird. Yeah, and yet weirdly addictive.
Yeah, this is the sort of thing that makes me worry about our civilization.
I'm just going to assume it is not intended for the sober.
Not really.
No.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, check that out. It's interesting, to say the least.
We'll probably waste about an hour and a half before you realize it.
Yeah. Hmm. Right. So we got Batman, Arkham Knight, $40 season pass if you want to have all of the story content.
Yeah, Warner Brothers games can go fuck themselves.
Oh. Hey, that answered my question. I was wondering if you guys were going to pay for that.
Well,
because this is seriously like the third or fourth major release they've done this shit.
Yeah. Well, I want to know is like what the base game will include. If it actually has a proper ending that, you know, doesn't leave you hanging, then, you know, the season pass won't be so much of a big deal. It'll just be stuff for people who actually want to stay in that world a little longer and, you know, experience it for a little
while.
That's
probably a lot of people, to be fair.
To be fair, yeah.
Yeah.
But if they're deliberately gimping the main game to sell the season pass, then I would have a problem with that. We don't know what this is at this point.
I'd have trouble with it just because any season pass over $25 gives me heartburn. Well, more like acid reflux.
You know, I paid for the worst thing is, for MKX.
And, you know, and the worst thing is we're still all going to buy this because we know it's going to be great.
No, I'm not buying it.
Me either. I have
fuck you guys because I like Batman.
I have Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, but that was because they were on the Instant Game Collection.
Yeah. I don't know. It looks good, but I don't know. Considering what else is going to be out during that time, it may get lost.
It's going to be a pretty
plus
crowded.
Plus, we still got E3 to get through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that could be a situation that goes from bad to worse.
Yeah.
For our wallets.
Yeah. Plus, just wait 6 months and there'll be a Game of the Year edition, just like Shadow of Mordor, which just came out.
$30 for the game and the season pass.
It's 50 for the game with all the DLC. So.
Oh right, Warner Brothers.
Yeah, Warner Brothers. So there's that.
Okay, so for this next story, we're kind of winding back to the start of the year, right around the time of the premiere of the Day Zero update.
Yeah, Brandon had just come on.
Yeah,
a regular contributor.
Yay.
We kind of had this pegged as one of the big gaming stories to watch of 2015.
Yep.
And
we were right.
Hatred. Yep.
Now has a release date, June 1st. Still has its AO rating.
Mm-hmm.
Still slated to release on Steam. And if everything goes ahead as planned, this is going to, it's going to have some interesting unintended consequences that honestly should help, I think, mature
the industry,
just the retail side of gaming altogether.
Mm-hmm. On top of probably being one of the most pirated releases of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's kind of a given.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that last trailer, and it's like, okay, who's writing this stuff? Because, god damn, they suck.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely...
Yeah, they kind of... They just suck. They're just terrible at promoting this thing properly.
Yeah.
They just do. I mean, the writing, it just does not look compelling at all.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. You know, I'd be interested if, you know,
look
if
there at was... From the eyes of some asshole 15-year-old screwball, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, who their audience for this game actually is.
Their target audience clearly is not within the ESRB's recommended demographic.
Nope.
Very likely.
Yeah. Plus, this is supposed to be a tactical shooter.
It doesn't look too tactical to me.
No, I'm not seeing anything tactical. To be fair, they actually haven't shown any actual gameplay.
They've shown gameplay.
Yeah.
An old PS1 game called Loaded.
Oh, I love that game. That was great.
Yeah.
Well, if this turns out anything like that, it'll be fantastic.
Yeah.
But I doubt that. You know, I was just getting that kind of vibe off of the way it seemed to handle.
Hmm.
Yeah, but see, Loaded had a sense of humor.
Yeah. That's true.
This is just dark, grim, depressing. Yeah.
Nihilistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was speaking more from a mechanical standpoint.
Yeah. But it does have a Steam store page now, even though you can't pre-purchase it yet. So it looks like this game actually will be released on Steam, as a, you know.
Yep. So here's the interesting part. A lot of visual novels been popping up on Steam lately, including some hentai games that have been censored for Steam. And now you've got Hatred coming on here with the AO rating and the Steam Greenlight backing, getting ready to launch on June 1st.
Oh, this I should point out, this game has skipped Greenlight. This has gone main Steam already.
Well, it was greenlit before.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that. But usually a Steam Greenlight game will not, like, show up on the main Steam search.
Yeah.
For a little while, so.
That might partly be just because Steam is still trying to find out what the hell they're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that.
And that's kind of where I was going with this, because there are all these visual novel and eroge developers out there that have got their games published on Steam censored, and now Hatred comes in with its AO rating, it's getting on the service with the full hype behind it. If I'm the publisher of one of these visual novels, I'm starting to think, hey, I'm going to go to the ESRB, get my AO rating, come back to Valve with it like a badge on my sleeve, and, you know, either they're going to publish the game as is or they're hypocrites.
Yeah.
And everyone will know they're hypocrites.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting mechanical conundrum that they've got, because, you know, a little age gate on the store page isn't going to cut it for this.
No.
Yeah. Nope.
Mm-mm. And so, have that in place, whatever they're going to do, then they're going to have all the infrastructure they need for anything else.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have no.
And if,
like,
and if I have, you know, if
go ahead.
I was going to say, once this does go in and it does stay with the AO rating, you know, the floodgates are going to be open.
Yeah. They're going to have to be.
Yep.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see how they're going to try to make sure that, you know, kids aren't playing this. It's got to be something credit card related.
Yeah, I've got to do credit card related. Either, you know. Yeah, they can get personal information from the credit card company that you have on file. So for a lot of people, this probably won't even be an issue.
Yeah,
probably not. Yeah. And I mean, I was looking at the preview of the game. Oh, it's just horrible.
It's disgusting. But,
yeah, yeah, it always really. Yeah, I really don't want to see kids going into their mom's purses and taking credit cards and, you know, just saying, well, I'm going to play this.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of those 15-year-old screwballs I was talking about that are going to be getting their hands on this game, though. That's just kind of a given.
Yeah.
Sadly, there
is. You know, I'm glad that we're at the point now in the industry where, you know, we can have games that are AO and can be, you know, because, you know, I'm glad that we're at that point. I just
we're finally
wish
past
it was another
birth of death sentence.
I just wish it was some other game other than Hatred.
Well, that's the thing. My interest in Hatred has nothing to do with its content as a game. I have no plans to buy it, really. I'm looking forward to watching Valve fall all over themselves trying to get an infrastructure in place to sell AO-rated games and then see what the fallout of that is once they do. I guess I just kind of want to watch the world burn.
Yeah.
Yeah, much like the guy in Hatred.
Ironically. In a very ironic way.
Yeah.
I just want to see the chaos that ensues from this release.
Yeah.
Not just from the game itself, but from the bag of shit that Valve is going to get stuck holding as a result of this.
Yeah.
Oh, the media backlash. Oh, my God.
That's fantastic.
Oh, it's... I'm going to get my popcorn and my...
I read this. Now I'm looking forward to it. I'm just going to... You know, tune into whatever news streams I can get a hold of and watch the butthurt parade roll by. It will be magnificent. Yeah.
Why are they releasing this when we're gearing up to elect another president? In America, at least.
Yeah.
You know this is going to end up being...
After having just 3 or 4 days of unrest in Baltimore, Maryland.
When I was watching that, I kept thinking, well, you know, Baltimore.
Well, if Battlefield Hardline isn't going to be a political issue,
No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these guys are not American developers, so
it's a Polish studio.
Yeah, Polish studio. So they could kind of care less about the American political situation.
Yeah, well, politicians are going to pull this crap into the limelight.
Destructive Creations can grab the popcorn with the rest of us, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that when you put something like this in the limelight, just like the original GTA, when it initially came out and had a whole bunch of political backlash against it, it just boosted its sales.
And now it's one of the big. And now it may very well be the biggest selling gaming franchise of its era.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I started reading Jacked last night. No spoilers. I want to learn for myself whether Grand Theft Auto gets banned or not. Oh wait.
Yeah, how you liking the Hauser brothers so far?
They're a really interesting duo, to say the least. I mean, one of them he's got that punk rock, you know, mentality to him, and the other guy is very much an artist.
Yeah,
it's
Sam and Dan Hauser.
Yeah.
Dan Hauser is the one of the two brothers that's most involved in the game development.
Yeah,
I mean, he's one of the primary writers of the GTA. Franchise, so
yeah, and he's really good at what he does. And one of the things I like about Rockstar, and it's kind of diverging a little bit, but that's what we do on this show.
Yep. Oh yeah,
they never really milk a franchise too much. It takes so long for their games to come out, but they're always good when they do.
Yeah,
you know
they know when to let it ride.
Yeah. You know, it's been, three, from Grand Theft Auto 4 to 5, I think it was 3 or 4 years?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
GTA 3 and Vice City and San Andreas came at a pretty good clip.
Yeah.
But even that wasn't really excessive.
Yeah, that was about every 2 years.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So there's that. Anyway, to get back onto the main story, Valve can move pretty quickly when they want to, so it'll be interesting to see what they manage to do.
Mm. Yeah, and speaking of Valve,
moving quickly. Yeah.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah, because there are a lot of people who are jerks on the internet and will issue death threats to modders because they want to make money off of their creations.
Spoiler alert, folks. The internet is an asshole.
Yeah. Or at least some people on the internet are. But it's, so what's basically happened here is they've kind of backed off their stance on modding. The Skyrim paid mods have actually been pulled, and Bethesda and Valve are going to be regrouping and seeing what kind of system they can put in that will
actually...
They're
going to refund people who bought mods. It's just a huge mess.
It's a big mess. What some people actually have wanted was, it's like, I don't think they're mad at the... idea of having an aggregator for mods that's easy to install and all that good stuff. But I think a lot of people actually want the modders to actually have a bigger cut and for it to be voluntary. That's the, if you had the option to just download the mod and try it out, see if you like it and say, you know what, I want to support this guy, hit that donate button and then you pick how much you want to send them, and it goes through the Steam account, and away you go. But that's not what this was.
Yeah.
So we will wait and see how they handle this, but...
Meanwhile...
Yeah, there was another little story that broke somewhat related
Steam related.
Yeah.
Developers can now... unilaterally ban individuals from their games.
Hallelujah. Yep.
Ain't it about friggin' time?
All they have to do is give Valve the word and the ban will come down, no questions asked.
Hmm. Yep.
I can definitely see the good and the bad to this.
Yeah.
Obviously, on a basic level, giving developers the ability to police their own games is a good idea. Not all developers are wont to handle everything the same way. Remember recently a certain pissing contest between a popular YouTuber and an indie developer.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that Jim Sterling incident.
Yes. Mm. Well, no, I wasn't thinking about Jim Sterling. There was another one.
Hmm.
Total Biscuit.
Might have been. The one who basically... there was a passing comment by the developer. The YouTuber in question might have been Total Biscuit. Said, well, in light of how I now see the developer, there's no way I can objectively review this game, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And it just turned into this whole... stupid mess.
Yeah.
Which
is a little bit of a farce also, because there is no way to objectively review a game.
Yeah.
There's definitely potential for abuse here as far as less than scrupulous developers who want to, you know, censor commentary on their games.
Especially with Steam having a review system built into it.
Yeah.
Be honest, though, I looking at this from an outsider's perspective, I can only see more pros than cons.
Yeah.
Yeah. If everyone handles it like an adult, it should be all right.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this is game development we're talking about, so...
Yeah.
I don't like Valve's position that they'll just blindly... throw the ban hammer down just on request. If they had some sort of oversight involved in the process, that would be better.
Well, it seems like they would have some sort of criteria that that must be met before someone could get banned.
That's not how it reads.
Yeah.
It just says the developer sends us a request to ban somebody and we will ban them.
Yeah.
And that seems pretty consistent with the kind of back end staff that Valve clearly has working on Steam, non-existent.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, most of them will handle it like Tripwire, who have actually put clauses in their EULA, basically saying, "Okay, if you're a jerk on our game servers, we do reserve the right to ban your ass."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I'd be wondering about is, like, there are games where that wouldn't, where stuff like cheating wouldn't even enter into the picture. There's a lot of single player games out there. Would Steam actually honor developer requests to ban people from those?
I don't think so.
That would be unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine that a ban request for a single player game couldn't be anything but abuse.
Yeah.
Of the system, so I don't know. Maybe I just think really poorly of what people would do when empowered like this, but
okay, yeah, because I just don't see how this can end never well. Happened. It's never happened before that someone would gain power and then, you know, abuse it. That never happens.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The entire history of humanity.
Yeah, that just doesn't happen.
Shocking. Ugh.
More sad news.
Yeah. Konami voluntarily delisting itself from the New York Stock Exchange. In and of itself, not a disaster. Good cost-cutting measure if taken as just day-to-day operations of the company.
Mm-hmm.
But with everything going on with Konami, you have to take it in context. And, you know, Hideo Kojima's on the way out. Silent Hills just got canceled. What? Now they're delisting themselves from the New York Stock Exchange. This doesn't look good.
No.
No. It's.
It looks like they're completely... It looks like they may just completely shut down their video game development segment of the company.
Yeah. Because Konami does have, you know, quite a few other things that they've got their hands in Japan. And
yeah, maybe anime, just, book publishing, yeah, bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, it may just be, you know, a better fit for them at this point in time.
Music.
Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see if we start to see an IP fire sale, then we know they're getting out of it.
Yeah.
And right after we did the show last week, I was on Tumblr looking at possible gaming news, and I saw somebody asked Jeff Gerstmann over at Giant Bomb if Silent Hills will be mourned by anyone over there, and he said, a game that we never really saw in any actual form by a company that just seems to be torching everything on their way out of the gaming business, not really.
Yeah.
And
which, you know, because I can understand that, but at the same time, you know, I mean, there was so much potential for what could have been. Because, I mean, not only did you have Kojima on the project, you had freaking Guillermo del Toro, who is one of the great filmmakers of his generation.
And now he's saying that he's out of it and that it's canceled, and that pretty much caused Konami's announcement.
Yeah.
There's a lot of writing on the wall. It's going to be interesting to watch this.
Yeah.
If it holds or doesn't, I guess.
Yeah.
I am still very much interested in seeing what Kojima's going to do, because, you know, I said this last time, is he going to, you know, is he going to stick with game development somehow?
I would imagine.
Or is he going to, you know, finally pursue his dream of filmmaking, which he's been wanting to do for God knows how long?
I don't think he has to choose.
Yeah,
he can pretty much do both.
I wouldn't be surprised if Koji Pro pocketed the Snatcher and Zone of the Ender IPs, Zone of the Enders, and then just went on their merry way.
Hmm.
And, you know, supposing this is the end, how do you divvy up a company like Konami?
Well, yeah, sell it off to the highest bidder, I guess.
Yeah, at least just the video game division.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the most natural home for Castlevania, at least, would be Capcom.
Yeah, a Capcom-developed Castlevania would be interesting.
Yeah.
If you put Yoshinobu Ono on it, you might have something there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you've also got, let's see, what else? Metal Gear. Honestly, you know, I actually wouldn't mind Metal Gear going to, like, say, a Western developer like Naughty Dog.
Square Enix Europe.
Yeah. Somebody who knows how to some developer that knows how to both, you know, do really good cinematic visuals and cutscenes, but at the same time also have really good, compelling gameplay.
Give it to Blizzard.
You know, or Crystal Dynamics. I think
Bungie would have to be in that conversation if it came to that. Another interesting choice for Castlevania could be Platinum Games.
Ooh.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, give Hideki Kamiya a crack at that franchise.
Yeah. Or, you know, and as for the Silent Hill franchise, I'm trying to think who would be a good developer for a Silent Hill game.
Tecmo Koei?
No, I think they're a little too weird for that.
Well, they do the Fatal Frame games.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. We'll just have to see.
And Kadokawa's been getting into the gaming business in recent years. That could be a good pickup for him.
Yeah. You know, whatever happens, I just hope
Harmonix
whatever happens.
Have to get in on DDR.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. God, they would freaking.
They would resurrect the series.
That would be much. Awesome.
Yeah, I'd be behind that.
I mean, DDR still makes money. I mean, there are still DDR machines all over the place. So
you're not even kidding.
Yeah.
But whatever happens.
Everyone knows DDR and Dance Central did not go nearly as well as Harmonix hoped it would.
No.
No.
So you look at those two situations and it just seems like a natural fit.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm just hoping whatever happens that Kojima somehow stays somewhere involved in game development, because the game world is a far more interesting place when he's in it.
It really is. I'm not a fan of everything that he says and does, but damn if he isn't entertaining.
Yeah.
And he always stays interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. I mean, he could probably conceivably, you know, do it all on his own, basically. I know several people, if Kojima would, like, open up a Patreon, they'd be all over that.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Well, Koji Pro is a company unto itself.
Yeah.
And has been for years. Yeah. So, everything is in place to where he could do that easily if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of seeing what's next, and that's assuming that things at Konami are really as bad as they appear to be right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that house is burning down as we speak.
It really is.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, more upbeat news.
Yeah.
The Strong Museum of Play had their nominees.
In New York,
yeah. Their first wave of nominees, which is interesting. So, that's.
Well, inductees.
Inductees,
but...
yeah.
Yeah, they're in.
Okay.
We got some obvious choices, some that you could make a really good case for, and then there are others that, you know, I wouldn't say you could make a case against them, but you could make a case against them going in right away at the expense of some of the snubs on the list. So
the obvious ones, we got obviously Super Mario, Zelda, Tetris, Sonic the Hedgehog, Doom, Pac-Man, Pong, and Space Invaders. And
all of those are stone cold lead pipe locks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you start a video game Hall of Fame, they have to be there, period.
Yeah. And then we got some that are sort of okay. So Pokemon and World of Warcraft, because even though they are more recent, you know, they have had a serious impact on the industry.
Yeah.
Indeed, they have.
Pokemon kept Nintendo alive in the late 90s. World of Warcraft pretty much revolutionized the MMO business.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would have gone with World of Warcraft on my personal list, because I tend to lean toward the originators of things.
Like EverQuest.
I would actually go back a little further and probably look at Ultima Online.
Yeah, that's true.
For that purpose. But I don't feel so strongly about that I would argue that World of Warcraft doesn't deserve to be there, because it absolutely does.
Yeah. So then we've also got some other ones. Oregon Trail I can actually get behind, because if you grew up in with a computer department in your school when you were growing up, Oregon Trail was going to be a part of it. So, you know, I mean, that, and that franchise has been around since the 80s. So,
yeah, I don't know if it had to go in right away, but it definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But then we've got something like Angry Birds. FIFA.
Yeah, Angry Birds is in the Hall of Fame.
It's been something for the casual gamer. I mean, it's been something.
Yeah, it doesn't give a fuck what you think of it. You start it up and your day is done.
Yeah. FIFA.
I still think it could have waited a few turns before actually being put in the Hall of Fame. I think it's ending up there was a matter of course.
Yeah, eventually. So we've also got FIFA, which, okay.
Yeah. Everybody loves mine, I guess.
Minecraft, which...
I can get behind Minecraft.
Yeah, Minecraft is sort of unique in the gaming world because it was basically a beta when it started, and it just became a culture of its own. So, yeah.
Plus, it's a big title in education.
It's the best-selling PC game of all time and the third best-selling game of any kind of all time.
Yeah.
Was really behind that one when we talked about it a few days ago. Yeah. So I'm just going to give him the shout out on that.
Yeah.
And then finally, we have The Sims for the already category. And I would actually would have gone with like Sim City or something.
I probably would have
something that started.
Yeah.
Sim City first.
Yeah.
Yeah. But The Sims did have more of the. Popularity in the casual market, so
yeah, I can understand why it went there.
Yeah.
As for the snubs, no Street Fighter 2,
which that one's an outrage.
Yeah, well, I mean, we still got next year, so.
Well, yeah. even so, I mean, if you're talking inaugural picks, that what Street Fighter 2 did. You know, from an arcade standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, I think it had to be one of the first picks.
Yeah.
It definitely belongs right there alongside Doom, alongside The Legend of Zelda, you know, Space Invaders. It pretty much did the exact same thing that Space Invaders did for arcades.
Yeah.
So, also,
no Dragon Quest, which is weird because Dragon Quest is basically the template for all console RPGs that we know of.
Yeah.
Cultural phenomenon in Japan.
Yeah. Without Dragon Quest, there would be no Final Fantasy. There would be no Breath of Fire. There would be no, you know, anything in the Xeno series. Just none of that would exist.
Lunar, Grandia.
You know, no DDR, which that's also weird because that game when it came out was sort of gave one last final breath to the arcade scene in the States before it finally died.
It helped arcades survive fighting games.
Yeah.
Yeah. And finally, absolutely nothing from Yu Suzuki.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely bizarre because that guy is maybe one of the people most responsible for advancing technology in arcade gaming.
Yeah.
He's one of the greatest hardware wizards of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the guy, he gave us freaking
Outrun,
Virtua Fighter, Space Harrier, and Virtua Fighter. People don't realize this. The first Virtua Fighter game, literally to get the hardware, they actually had to get the hardware from freaking Lockheed Martin to make the game.
Yeah, I remember that.
And straight up, if Virtua Fighter is good enough for the Smithsonian, it's good enough for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
it is. You know, I mean, again, this game. You know, before then, all fighting games were, you know, either Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat clones.
And they were all 2D, and, you know, Virtua Fighter was really the Trojan horse for 2D, or for 3D.
Yeah.
As far as implementing the graphics in-game, making it work, and making it work in a way that really attracted people.
Yeah, and, you know, after that, we got Tekken and Battle Arena Toshinden and DOA and, you know, all the great 3D fighting franchises that came afterwards.
DOA, Tomonobu Itagaki, another hardware wizard.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's weird because, you know, in here in the U.S., obviously, Virtua Fighter is kind of a niche, but, you know, over in Japan, it's like an institution.
Yeah, yes. It really is. But this is an American, you know, museum here, so there's going to be a skew.
Yeah.
The inclusion of Space Invaders tells me that they do acknowledge that, you know, what's a phenomenon in Japan.
Yeah.
Space Invaders was fantastic over here. It was really successful. In Japan, it was a fucking religion.
Yeah.
They had to empty out the machines on it a few times a day because the coin mechs were jamming.
Yeah. I think there's like a study somewhere where they were able to show that when Space Invaders debuted, there was a genuine drop in productivity.
There was also a shortage of 100 yen coins as a result.
Yeah. But
it's an actual coin shortage, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all in all, though, for the first year's inductees, it's not a bad list. It's just
just kind of bizarre.
Part of me thinks maybe they only had so many that they could put in for the first year, and they had to sort of spread it out over the generations to be able to get it.
Yeah, Space Invaders machines aren't exactly cheap these days.
That's true. But we've got next year, so I would not be surprised if some of these snubs ended up there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Forgot what I was going to say. I'm tired.
But if Angry Birds is going to be there, you know that at some point they're going to have Candy Crush in there too.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Oh, that's
that will be a dark day for gaming. Yeah.
And I would have put Bejeweled in there before Angry Birds.
Yeah.
Bejeweled was.
I also want to point out that they actually dug up a Master System copy of FIFA for the Hall of Fame.
Wow. That's random.
Yeah. So there's that little quirk. I can't help but be a little bit amused by that.
Yeah. Anyone want to talk about Final Fantasy, Pat?
Oh, there's a few things to say about it.
Yeah. Final Fantasy 15. Yep.
Yep. Episode du Sky was divisive,
to say the least.
And around the time it released, Tabata, for his part, basically opened the floodgate, said, come at me with whatever criticism or suggestions you have. And he's taking it all to heart.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Top 15.
Which is definitely a change from what Square Enix has been in the past.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, Tabata said, you know, it's going to be a new day.
Yeah, I don't like where he's taking the series, but I do like his philosophy about it.
Yeah. So they're going to be taking this shit seriously.
Yeah. I'm going to be addressing the complaints.
Well, he already did.
Yeah.
Directly.
Is the demo update available yet? No, it's not.
No, and questions still remain if Sony and Microsoft will allow an update for a demo. I hope they do, because I would love to see this evolve, and I think, like on the stream or on the podcast a few weeks ago after I'd played it, you might remember I said I'm not sure in its current form I could possibly put up with 40 to 60 hours of what the demo served up.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that changes. I hope that the demo can evolve into something that I will find a little more palatable and might even bring me to a change of heart around Final Fantasy 15, because it's a franchise. Gaming needs Final Fantasy to be good.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, if they were to just put Final Fantasy 15 out based on the demo, it would not be good.
No.
No.
It would not even be...
Yeah, you'd be looking at scores in the sixes, basically.
Yeah.
If that.
If that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a game. It's changed hands like 2 or 3 times by now. Yeah. So
I was pleased that some of the top 15 complaints were among those that that I brought up front to the podcast. Mm-hmm. So hearing that Tabata knows that that those issues are making the game suck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really hoping this demo update comes down because it needs it. Yeah. And I want Final Fantasy 15 to be a game that I can look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it isn't one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am honestly looking past Final Fantasy 15 at this point because of what Yosuke Matsuda stands for as the president of the company, mm-hmm. I still believe that Final Fantasy 16 is going to be a return to the series roots, a real throwback to the Super NES and PS1 years. And so I would like Final Fantasy 15 to be something that that can get us through until that can happen. But honestly, I'd really just rather get right to that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll wait for this demo update to come around, and I'm pretty sure they're going to let something like this through. It's a major enough game that they could probably relax their stances a little bit.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
Games Radar, meanwhile, had a really good kind of analytical piece about the theme of Final Fantasy XV. About the all-male cast and sort of the implications thereof. It's probably a bit much to go into detail on in the podcast, but we'll definitely have the link to that in the show notes. And I don't know, it just... it makes the idea a little more compelling and some of the quotes surrounding it a little less cringeworthy. And I don't know if this shapes up to be what Games Radar is making it out to be, then it really could be an evolutionary step in gaming narrative as a whole. And depictions of characters and things like that.
Yeah, but let's not really beat around the bush too much. I mean, Final Fantasy 15 at this point is a salvage job. Tabata is trying to salvage the disaster that was left in his hands.
Yeah.
I think he has the skill and the team behind him to make a pretty good game.
And the passion too. I mean, he really believes in this game.
Yeah. But at the same time, he's basically saddled with a story and, you know, assets that were basically already there for him. So yeah. He can't make the kind of changes that he probably would like to make.
Mm.
When 16 comes around, though, that's going to be all his.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm not sure about that.
Mm. Really?
I think he's been handed the keys to the franchise for the time being, but... I think he'll go off and do Type 1, and I think they're going to tap Hiroyuki Ito to make Final Fantasy 16. Just a gut feeling, but I don't know. Maybe that's how the old Square Enix would have handled it, but Matsuda might have different ideas, but that's just the impression I've been getting, and I also think it'd be a best-case scenario.
Yeah.
Because Ito was around for those Super NES and PS1 years. And so he's the guy who could really bring the franchise home.
Yeah.
And if Matsuda really wants to step in and bring Square Enix back to its JRPG roots, I think Ito's got to be your guy.
Final
Fantasy 16.
All right. Wait and see.
Yeah. And just for reference, this was the Final Fantasy IX guy I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who did the actually last good Final Fantasy on the PlayStation 1.
Yeah. Well, I think we got a show.
Yeah.
We do indeed. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it was significantly shorter than our last two shows.
Yeah. Well, we'll try to keep the length around this, you know, this length for future shows, but you never know. We like to gab.
We'll probably end up creeping up toward the 2 hour mark at times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, we were missing somebody this week, so
yeah.
You know, hopefully Lee is off the injured list next week. And
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, good to go. Well, with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Teresa Sammons.
And we'll see you all next week.